You are Locked On Fantasy, your daily fantasy football podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Locked On Fantasy Football Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Vinny Iyer. When I'm not doing this, I'm writing about NFL and fantasy football for SportingNews.com. You come to SN right now, you'll check out all the good stuff that you need for Week 14. We've got the picks against the spread for reality. We've got the sleepers and busts there for fantasy, as well as the positional rankings. And I'll have my decider start sit column up there to check out on Wednesday as well. So a lot of good stuff there, and we kind of translate all that for you here on Locked On Fantasy Football. And today it's a Wednesday, so it's a matchup focus day. We'll look at all the games here of Week 14, breaking them down from both sides from a fantasy football perspective. And we'll have Jeff Radcliffe, our regular guest of Pro Football Focus. Yep, he'll be back on the show all through the regular season, and he'll look at four games with us in particular that we're most intrigued by based on the projected point totals and what we think the fantasy football production will be. So keep in mind as a programming note, we'll also go Pro Football Focus tomorrow as well with our lineup focus show with Tyler Lochner talking DFS for the value plays on FanDuel and DraftKings here in Week 14. We've got a lot to get to. It's a big week, maybe the first week of the fantasy football playoffs, maybe the last week of the regular season trying to get in, depending on the size of your league. So we got to dive right in because we've got a full 16 games to talk about, and we always start on Thursday Night Football. The Jaguars and Titans, it's a 4.5 spread in favor of the Titans. 37.5 is the over-under, so expecting a very low-scoring game here. I think both teams are going to grind this out a little bit. Jaguars defense definitely inspired a lot last week, pitching a shutout against the Colts at home. They started playing like they were supposed to play for much of the year, especially now that they're out of the playoff race. And you look at the Jaguars, and these matchups are not good for the Titans overall. The Titans running game has just not looked all that inspiring of late. You've had Derrick Henry produce a little bit because of his scoring, but the split with Lewis and Henry is just frustrating in fantasy. The bright spot has been Corey Davis, who's helped Marcus Mariota have a couple good games here in a row. But Corey Davis is going to be a tough matchup here against the Jaguars secondary. I don't see a lot of scoring from the Titans, and I don't really see a lot of scoring in general from this game. I actually kind of like the Jaguars to win it because I think these defenses can go back and forth. It's going to come down to the difference maker. Both quarterbacks, Cody Kessler and Mariota, are going to be pretty conservative, keep the ball here, and I'd try to keep this a low-scoring game. But the difference maker to me is Leonard Fournette. You look at Isaiah Crowell against his Titans defense. He'd had a very nice game the previous week. It was Lamar Miller having a big run as well. So that bodes well for Fournette. He's well-rested. Keep that in mind as well. Didn't play last week after throwing the punch there against the Bills. Did not suit up against the Colts. So all these other team players of this game are beat up here. And Fournette's going to be the fresh guy coming in, probably his freshest and healthiest of the season. So I think a sneaky little stash there in DFS is Fournette and the Jaguars defense, because everyone will be kind of on the Titans defense in this one with that home primetime bump. But I think Jaguars are the better defense overall, and they're playing better at the moment. And Fournette, again, is going to help them there, because Kessler, I think the one thing you can look at with him, he's going to try to be conservative and protect the ball. He's going to facilitate Fournette. So I expect Fournette to get upward to 30 touches in this game, as I don't expect it to be a runaway or anything by the Titans. In fact, I'd like the Jaguars to win. So Fournette is where I'm going. The Jaguars and Titans defenses I'm looking at next. But in terms of the other skill players, quarterback in the passing game, tight ends included, I'm going away from them in this game. The next game we'll look at here is the Packers and Falcons as we flip to 1 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday. And we know what happened with Packers. Mike McCarthy was fired this week. Joe Philbin takes over. So still a familiar face there with this offense. That should spark some of this offense to be more streamlined here. That means a lot of Aaron Rodgers to Devontae Adams. not a surprise there, but a lot of Aaron Jones without any Jamal Williams. So it's the Packers' principles I'm trusting here, Rodgers, Adams, and Jones. Obviously not going to stretch their defense. I don't think that's going to inspire them to play all of a sudden much better on that side. That's been as big an issue as anything else, the disconnect with Rodgers or whatever. The defensive problems, not being able to fix that and not figuring out the running game, were the failures this season. So I expect a lot of Jones as an overcorrection from last week with Williams playing way too much. Adams is going to be targeted massively in this one. They don't really have anyone to cover him. Probably going to see a lot of Robert Alford, who's been destroyed in coverage. So I could see just a massive game from Adams. He scores pretty much every week, but yardage and catch-wise, this could just be a dominant performance. And I could see the same here, and will say the same for Julio Jones on the other side. Remember, Julio Jones has had some monster games against Green Bay. Once went up there on a Monday night, lit it up. Also destroyed them in the playoff game last time they met. So Julio Jones is in a great position overall to rebound from that clunker against the Ravens. The Packers don't have anyone in the secondary. So Julio Jones all in. I think if I'm going with the next option, it's Mohamed Sanu in the slot, because Calvin Ridley and Austin Hooper don't have great matchups by the numbers here for the number two receiver and the tight end against this Packers defense. So I think you're going to see a lot of Julio, a little Sanu mixed in. I think you're also going to see some Tevin Coleman in this one. And a lot of people are not thrilled about what Coleman has done, but when you look, the matchups have been great. In this particular matchup, the Packers do give up some things to shifty backs. We saw Chase Edmonds and David Johnson do things on the outside. So I think Coleman is going to get involved with some checkdowns. I figure the Packers are going to have a lead in this one. Falcons play the late. Coleman can score with his receiving prowess, and that's what you're basically looking for. Can he take a short pass and take it in the end zone? I think with Coleman, you're getting that. I wouldn't stretch to Ito Smith, but that's how I kind of see it. A lot of Julio, a lot of Adams, a lot of Coleman, and a lot of Jones in this particular game. The next game we look at is the Dolphins hosting the Patriots. Patriots are 8-point favorites in this one. 47 is the over-under. And with the Patriots, let's start with them. You can't really be too inspired to start Rob Gronkowski if he's your best tight end option in a year that's been really bad with tight ends. You go there for sure and hope for the best. I mean, this is a Dolphins team that can be okay against tight ends at times, but they also have Xavien Howard on the outside, so they might try to avoid that matchup a little bit. But still, I would see a lot of Julian Edelman and Josh Gordon. So if you've got somehow a better option at tight end, say it's Eric Ebron versus Gronkowski situation, or really there's not too many other situations where you sit Gronk, but I would be prepared to be a little bit disappointed with his production here in this one. So I think Gordon has proved that he can fight through a tough matchup and get going even when he's slow. That was the case last week when he had the touchdown and 58-yard receiving. I think Edelman corrects himself. But overall, I see the Patriots running a lot in this game against the Dolphins. So that's good news for Sonny Michel. James White still being heavily involved in the short passing game and in the running game with Rex Burkhead back. So I like the backs plenty. A lot of short passes to Edelman, maybe one shot to Gordon. Very simple to figure out the Patriots' offense at this very moment. On the other side of things, with the Dolphins, I'm going to avoid. There's nothing there I'm going to like. Devontae Parker is going to get Stephon Gilmore. The Patriots are going to make Kenyon Drake the focal point of the offense. And then when you peel back, there's not much else there for the Dolphins. So avoid, but I still don't love the Patriots' defense on the road, because the Dolphins will have somebody random do something for Ryan Tannehill and be productive. But in terms of the principles for the Dolphins, I'm staying away this week, because the Patriots can easily zone in and take those players out with no effort. Now, the next game we're looking at 1 o'clock is the Giants and the Redskins. And with this one, I think you have to think that the Giants are going to keep it simple here with what they've done in recent weeks here. Saquon Barkley and a lot of Odell Beckham Jr. The Eagles kind of simplified things as well. It was pretty much the mix of their running backs, Golden Tate and Zach Ertz last week. So I think it's going to be very similar, except it's going to be Barkley dueling as that top runner and top receiver. And you got Beckham really in a good matchup with Josh Norman, who's faded here if he gets him. Beckham is just too involved right now, where it's really hurting Sterling Shepard. They're probably going to be without Evan Ingram for another week with that hamstring injury, so not really trusting Rhett Ellison or extending to the tight end there this week. But Barkley and Beckham, you feel good about. Not going to stretch to Eli Manning. I just don't trust him. If they lose this game, the Giants, they're going to be out of the playoff race, and then you can see Kyle Laletta starting there. So, but at least you know Barkley and Beckham, they're getting the playmakers primarily involved because they know that's about all Eli can do at this very moment. Now, on the Redskins side of things, it's Mark Sanchez starting because Colt McCoy went down with a fibula injury. I expect a lot of checkdowns and shorter passes, of course, a lot of featuring and handing off to Adrian Peterson here. The Giants' run defense, especially up the middle, hasn't been as good, and they've given up some big plays without Damon Harrison there. So I really like Peterson at least to get the volume. And remember, all he needs is one burst and one touchdown to really make his value worth it. So at this point, with all the attrition at running back and guys not touching the balls consistently, you got to go with Peterson. And I think you have to look at Jordan Reed in this one. Sanchez is going to be Mr. Checkdown as much as possible in this. And Colt McCoy had a good connection with Reed. I think Sanchez will build on that this week. Maybe if you're really desperate, go for Jameson Crowder. We just don't know him with Maurice Harris and the other receivers there. But I like Reed and Peterson as guys that you can play this week. And if you're going to try to stream these defenses, I don't know if I would completely go there. I think the Redskins have a little bit more upside because they're playing at home. And we know Eli Manning is defensive mistake prone there. So I'm going to the Redskins. They're not extending and trying to chase the Giants points from the Bears matchup last week. Our next game that we'll look at is the Jets and the Bills. This could be an ugly one. Sam Darnold is on track to return here and play for the Jets. If the foot checks out in practice this week, he will be the quarterback. We're just waiting on the line on that, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, Sam Darnold could give them actually an upgrade over Josh McCown, who's really done nothing here of late. He's gotten some different guys involved, but they're trying to play really conservative. Robbie Anderson, those deep shots from last year from McCown are gone. So we'll see what they do with Darnold coming back. Will he be a little shy? It's a tough Bills pass defense on the road. So I expect they'll try to establish the run and try to stay in the game that way, because the Jets can probably expect the Bills not to run away with this. So I think you'll see a lot of Isaiah Crowell. Got over 20 touches last week. Looked pretty good. The Bills are vulnerable against the run. He didn't do much against them the first time, but he did score a touchdown. So there's that, and I think he's the guy that you're looking at most here with Quincy Nunua and Anderson and Chris Herndon. You're going to avoid all those in this particular time. If you're going to go a little deep at receiver, I might look at Zay Jones and Robert Foster. Robert Foster cooled off last week but just missed a long touchdown. Zay Jones had a zero the week before, had a couple touchdowns last week, but both of them did really well in the first matchup against the Jets. That was a Matt Barkley game, notably, but again, both of these guys have produced with Josh Allen in there, and they've now cleared some junk there with Kelvin Benjamin and Andre Holmes gone. So they realize who their best receivers are. They're trying to keep it simple for Allen, have go-to guys beyond LeSean McCoy coming out of the backfield. Really, he's not a receiving option for Allen because he's a guy who takes off and runs or likes to throw downfield. He's not necessarily playing it safe, which also makes him a nice little DFS bargain play. Again, he's been hot the last 2 weeks producing with his legs, and I think he could do a little bit more with his arm this week as well. So if you're looking for that, maybe a tournament play, you can look at either Jones. I would go more with Foster because he's the boom or bust type player there with Allen. If you're going to go there, McCoy is solid in all formats here this week. Had a big game against the Jets the first time. The Bills should be in control, and I really like the Bills defense. So McCoy and a Bills defense stack also sound pretty darn good this week there. So I expect the Bills defense to come through. And keep in mind, the Bills could be a nice league winner, or at least get you into the championship game. With the Jets this week at home, they get the Lions next week at home with the struggling Matthew Stafford. So a good 2 week window to play the Bills defense, that's for sure. The next game we'll talk about here before we bring on Jeff Ratcliffe is the Colts and Texans from this 1 p.m. window. And it's a 5-point spread in favor of the Texans. It's 49.5 is the over-under. So we're expecting some points here in the 20s. When we look at the Colts, Andrew Luck had a big game against this team the first time at home, but really struggled on the road last week. They scored no points in a 6-0 loss. And maybe the limitations of the Colts offense around him, with T.Y. Hilton and Eric Ebron basically being the primary targets. And if they can't run the ball effectively, that's not going to help Andrew Luck here. So I'm suddenly not feeling Andrew Luck, and I get it was one game last week, but it was on the road against a good defensive opponent in the division that know him pretty well. So it's a very similar scenario here. So I've got another viable option. I'm turning to him over Andrew Luck in this particular week. I look at Hilton and Ebron, you're keeping in just because of the volume. I wouldn't extend to the running game with Marlon Mack or Nyheim Hines or Jordan Wilkins. I just don't like the way the Colts have run the ball of late, and Mack particularly hasn't looked good. The Texans are good against the run. Now, on the other side, for the Texans, with all those things going on wrong for the Colts offense, I think their defense red hot with the big pick game against Baker Mayfield last week. They not get the sacks because we know Andrew Luck is getting them the ball out, but there's definitely going to be chances for takeaways there. So Texans defense, Lamar Miller, another one of those running back defense stacks to look at this week. Miller's getting the volume. He's looking darn good. It's on this nice turf here, and Colts can be vulnerable against backs with a little bit of juice there on the fast track. So you like Miller, you like DeAndre Hopkins. If you like a extended play here for the Texans, I might look at Jordan Thomas, the tight end. He can do some damage in the red zone against the Colts for sure. Colts have been decent against the tight end, but Jordan Thomas getting more involved is that complimentary really target to Hopkins playing off what he can do downfield. And Hopkins is going to rebound. He had over 90 receiving yards last week, but this is a chance where he goes for 100 and a touchdown in this game for sure. So Miller, Hopkins, that means you've got to like Deshaun Watson as well. If you're going to maybe think about Jordan Thomas in this one, we'll see about Kiki Kuti if he plays to help Watson. But otherwise, with his running and Hopkins, really, you don't really don't need much else in this matchup to be a productive day for you. So Watson, Miller, Hopkins, you're going there along with the Texans defense. So the Colts fading Luck and Mack, but still sticking with Hilton and Ebron in this one just because of the volume and the roles that they have as primaries in this Colts offense. Now, ever since I started doing the podcast, and people have looked at what I've done at sportingnews.com, picks against the spread, and I talk about the over-unders here all the time and how we relate those to fantasy and the potential of these games for scoring. Well, I got to tell you, where you bet is just as important as what teams you're betting on, and that's why you have to go to MyBookie. MyBookie, I can't recommend them enough. They've been in this business for years. It's the best online wagering site experience you'll have out there, and they also have now a very convenient mobile site that makes betting on the go a breeze, a live in-game betting, and for you fantasy football players, they have a prop game there where you can bet on over-unders or a player's particular points for a week. So a lot of good games there at MyBookie. It's a lot of fun. You can get on the action and really know a lot more about these teams now. It helps when you're going to MyBookie now to close out this regular season on a bang. And the best thing here for you, just in time for the holiday season, to maybe boost your earning potential there at MyBookie, they're offering a $25 bonus on top of the deposit dollar for dollar match with your initial deposit there at MyBookie. All you have to do is enter the promo code LOCKDOWN25 and make your initial deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern Time. That's because that gives MyBookie a break there. Everyone, those new bettors, are slamming the site during the day. If you can wait till after 7 p.m., if you deposit at least $100, they're going to give you that $25 bonus on top of that dollar for dollar deposit match there. So it's a great deal to get in on the action at MyBookie now. Again, the promo code is LOCKEDON25 to take advantage of that offer through the MyBookie app or through the MyBookie website. That's MyBookie.com. MyBookie. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. We'll be right back here with Jeff Ratcliffe of Pro Football Focus to look at our four most intriguing matchups of the week. Joining me now, as he always does on Wednesdays for Matchup Focus, to help us look at four of the more intriguing games on the schedule for fantasy football, is Jeff Ratcliffe of Pro Football Focus. Jeff, how's it going?
Very good. I did not miss the fantasy playoffs in any important league to me, so I'm always happy to report that. And I love having a bye in the first week of the fantasy playoffs and have that in one of my most important home leagues. So ear to ear right now. But of course, we know we're only guaranteed to play one game in the playoffs. So hopefully I get more than one game.
Yeah, no, it's all about the matchups. We always say it's all about the matchups. And definitely it is this week. You want to win or go home. And there's some key games that we have to look at definitely here in week 14. We'll start with the Ravens and Chiefs. A lot of questions about this one. We'll start with the Chiefs. Now, Spencer Ware, by the numbers, is not a good matchup. They've signed Charcandrick West, and they used a little bit of Damian Williams. He didn't look particularly good. He did get the touchdown last week. What are you feeling in this Chiefs offense in this particular week against a good Ravens defense?
Well, he didn't look good, you're right, but he did get three carries down in the goal line area and converted one of them for a score. So that's really the big number that I'm concerned with. Damian Williams is more of a passing down back. And the nice thing, as you mentioned, Charcandrick West, he's not – I mean, if they would have signed C.J. Anderson, I would have been a little bit more concerned about Ware, but Charcandrick West is a passing down back, so I'm not concerned about him either. I think Ware is locked in, but the matchup is pretty bad. This Ravens defense is no joke. They've held a lot of opposing running backs in check this season. But that being said, in a game that has a projected or implied over-under of 53 points – with the Chiefs as a 6.5-point favorite, you got to figure there's some opportunity there for Ware to punch it in. So I'm still using him as an RB2 this week.
And looking at the matchups for the rest of the Chiefs' primary guys here, this is actually not a bad spot for Travis Kelce, because the Ravens have had some trouble with tight ends at times this year, gave up a pretty good game to Austin Hooper last week. And then Tyreek Hill, because they can move him in the slot and get him away from those outside corners.
That's true. I was actually asked, because Jimmy Smith shadowed Julio Jones. He's a big reason why Julio struggled last week. But I was asked that if Jimmy Smith would shadow Tyreek Hill. And the thing is that he's a very different receiver, obviously, than Julio Jones, a big-bodied guy, which is exactly what Jimmy Smith is. So I do expect, as you said, them to move him around. And the thing about Hill is, we know any given week could be a dud. Any given week, he could be the number one fantasy player overall, not just at wide receiver. So you have to start him, even in a tough matchup like this.
Now, this is probably a hard thing to decipher from their usage last week, but this Ravens backfield, we thought we were rolling along with Gus Edwards here, and then you had a lot of Kenneth Dixon right off IR last week, and then you had Ty Montgomery has been a big part. Now, does it worry you all about the game flow for Edwards in this particular game?
Not necessarily, because I think they're still going to try and get him the ball. Kenneth Dixon was involved, but that's only because you can't give Gus 30 carries in a game. And Ty Montgomery is really the primary passing down back. So in some ways, we could kind of look to a parallel in New England, where Sony Michel is the clear lead back. That's Gus Edwards. You have James White as the clear passing down back. That's Ty Montgomery. And then you have Rex Burkhead, which is essentially Kenneth Dixon at this point. So a poor man's version of all three of those in Baltimore, essentially. And I still think Gus has the volume in this matchup to be an RB2 play.
Now, is there any way you can trust anything in the Ravens passing game? I think maybe one guy I might look at is Mark Andrews, just because of the way that he's been used of late, and maybe he can take advantage of this matchup.
Possibly. I think you'd still have to be somewhat hard up at tight end to make that play. Tight end is just terrible. If you don't have really, I guess you would say the top six, because I think you can include Jared Cook now in that conversation. If you don't have one of those guys, I mean, honestly, you're just grasping at straws and just hoping for a touchdown. And maybe you could get that out of Andrews. I'll probably take my shot elsewhere. But as you mentioned, nobody else. I mean, John Brown, it's not for a lack of targets. He's being heavily targeted. He's not catching anything. And I don't know if that's him and Lamar not being on the same page. But at this point, you can't use John Brown. And in fact, I wouldn't talk you out. Like, if you said, I have to drop somebody to pick up Dante Pettis, would you drop John Brown? I'd say, yes, absolutely, I would.
Yeah, you definitely have to fade everything until you see Joe Flacco somewhat come back in that Ravens offense. Now, the next game will go to a pretty good matchup all around of the Saints and Buccaneers. And to me, for the Saints,
tell me if I'm wrong on this one. I feel like this is one of those revenge, get well, stop being cute games. I think it's going to be pretty much Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, and you're not going to get much out of those periphery guys this week.
It would make sense. It would make sense. Now, the Saints haven't always made sense. Certainly last week, I know a lot of fantasy owners are reluctant to use Saints after last week, but it is still one of the most potent offenses in the league. It's a 55.5 over under right now, so it's going to be a high scoring affair potentially. But the one thing that I do go back to is in the first week of the season was one of the, probably the biggest surprises that we've seen all year when Tampa went out and absolutely stomped this Saints team. And this was a Saints defense that 2 years ago, not very good. Last year, very good. And then started the season terrible. Now they've sort of rebounded and they've been pretty decent recently. But it could be one of those scenarios. Does Tampa have their number? That's the question. Do they know what to do? This is a home game as well for them. And we know Drew Brees outside, at least it's not outside in the cold, but still outdoors, not as strong of a play. I think some people out there might be ranking him as the number one option this week. I think that's pushing it, although I have him at three, so I'm not terribly down on him. But yeah, I think it is sort of back to basics here, firing up Kamara, firing up Michael Thomas, and getting Mark Ingram involved.
Now, with the Buccaneers, I feel like this could be a carbon copy of last week. Mike Evans, another pretty decently tough matchup there with Marshawn Lattimore, possibly. And then you look at Cameron Brate, the Saints haven't allowed much to tight end. So I'm thinking, based on the matchups that you have there on your wide receiver cornerback chart, there with Eli Apple and PJ Williams, that this looks like a good game for Chris Godwin and Adam Humphries to stay hot.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, last week, Michael Gallup sort of surprised folks in that contest, that generally surprising game in general against New Orleans. He was against Eli Apple. That was it. Eli Apple was essentially shadowing him with Marshawn Lattimore shadowing Amari Cooper. So I would expect that. And with DeSean Jackson, potentially, I mean, wouldn't shock me if he ends up on injured reserve, but potentially missing more time here. Godwin, that was the only thing that was holding him back. He's a very good player, has good chemistry with Jameis Winston. And to anybody out there who thinks that Mike Evans is having a bad season or he's been a disappointment for fantasy, go look at his numbers real quick. Just do yourself that favor. Look at where he sits currently in the league in receiving yards and then tell me that he's had a bad season.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that you're locking in because he can change those things really quickly. It doesn't matter the matchup. He's just sometimes too talented to not get his points in a game like this, especially with a high volume in the passing game. Now, a game that we'll switch to in the late window is the Steelers and Raiders. And the Steelers, I think the question is, do you start Jalen Samuels at tight end this week? Just kidding. do you trust him as your RB2 this week? I know they've hinted at a committee, but in the past, their MO, whether it's D'Angelo Williams or even Stephen Ridley in week 17, they're not a committee team at running back.
We did see them briefly, although I, 100% agree with that. We did see them briefly in that sort of, we don't have anybody, so let's get Fitz Toussaint out there period, where they didn't necessarily do the every down bell cow approach. But generally speaking, that has been their MO. Mike Tomlin in the presser was very clear to point out that he said, we really like Jalen recently. So the rookie has come along. We know that he's a versatile player. That's why he's listed at tight end. He was listed at 5'11 tight end in the draft. It was an odd listing for him anyway. He's always been viewed as a running back by the Steelers. And if you're going to try and get cute with that, don't do it to yourself. Somebody actually asked me, should I start Jalen Samuels over Travis Kelce? I mean, come on, come back to us a little bit. Kelce's phenomenal. We're not getting cute there. So I do have a little bit of concern that Ridley is used a little bit more than maybe some expect. So I am using Samuels, but he's more of a back end RB2. Like, for example, the other hot name at running back this week is Jeff Wilson. I have Wilson ahead of Samuels. If I had the choice between the two this week, without knowing Samuels' role 100%, I'm going to use Wilson to be safe.
Now, here's another guy that's having a big season, but fantasy owners get frustrated by him just by going one game, is Juju Smith-Schuster. But this seems like a great spot for him to have the fun that Antonio Brown has had in recent weeks and kind of balance that out again.
You would think. And the team is sustaining essentially two wide receiver ones for fantasy, which is obviously not an easy thing to do when you look historically. I mean, there's only 12 in the league and two of them on the same team. That's just kind of crazy to think about. But you mentioned Brown. I know that people were frustrated a little bit. You know, it's not that he was bad or anything earlier in the season, but he wasn't quite living up to the draft capital. Well, he has recently. He's the number two fantasy receiver over the last month, with Juju fading just slightly, but he's still over 1,000 yards on the season. He still has, six 100-yard games on the season for Juju. That upside is still very much there, and obviously you're still using him as a wide receiver one play.
Now, would you trust Vance McDonald this one? Now, it looks like by the charts, the Raiders have now given up the most fantasy points to tight end, but they also did play Travis Kelce last week, so I don't know if that's a bit skewed, but when you look at McDonald, he's a guy that seemed to come through in the matchups that say he should come through in.
Yes, but I do also think that I had mentioned earlier, if you have the top six, I think you're good. If you have tight end, and this week in my rankings, from tight end 7 to tight end 18, I am not confident that there's any difference between those guys. So essentially a complete toss-up for about 11 or so tight ends. Not good. And Vance McDonald is one of them. You're really just hoping he gets in the end zone, maybe sees a little bit of volume in this one. He has the upside, at least. He is a top 12 fantasy tight end on the season. So I think your probably best bet is to play him and not really overthink it if that's your option this week.
Now, looking at Jared Cook, this looks like another great spot for him because of looking at Joe Hayden and Mike Hilton and other guys that can really limit these limited Raiders receivers. Do you see Cook kind of actually not regressing and actually finishing strong here?
I think he will. Yeah, I do. The thing that was most encouraging last week wasn't necessarily just Cook, because obviously he was a monster in that game as well, but it was Derek Carr kind of rebounding a little bit, looking to the end zone a lot, and really feeding the ball to Jared Cook. And I think that does continue in this one. Hopefully that was a sign of Derek Carr maybe turning a little bit of a corner here at the end of the season.
Now, the last game we'll talk about is the big one. It's on Sunday Night Football. It's the Rams and Bears. And there's a lot of differing opinions on this one I've seen. It's a 51.5 over under. The Rams are 3-point favorites here on the road. Now, I kind of see this when I look at the Rams, and I wrote this in making the pick for this game, that the team built to play in cold weather and kind of grind out a game like this that could have some defensive struggles is the Rams in this one, not the Bears. And I see this being a big Todd Gurley game with volume and production in this.
It's going to have to be volume, because that Bears run defense is still pretty good. And really, I've been impressed with Roquan Smith this season. He's got a lot of range, as we expected, at the linebacker position. But the nice thing that I've seen, at least so far, is he's not making some of those over-pursuit mistakes that you will see sometimes out of younger players at the position. Regardless, hey, Todd Gurley, yeah, he's awesome. He actually isn't my number one this week, because Christian McCaffrey is just slightly more awesome. But regardless, this is an interesting contest. And the thing about it that I'm really fascinated by is the passing game didn't really look that good against a Lions defense that is not the Bears, obviously. So that's the question. Can they go in here and kind of right the wrongs from last week, get Jared Goff back on track? And he's not going to have a lot of time to throw, as we know, and he's going to have to throw into tough coverage, as we know. So this is a tricky contest. There's no doubt about it for fantasy.
Now, how do you kind of see the matchups going on with the Rams wide receivers, and where would you feel good about in this bad matchup with Robert Woods and Brandon Cooks?
I guess I feel good about upside, and I do think that Brandon Cooks has more upside than Robert Woods. I have ranked him ahead of Woods a few spots. Cooks at 11 and Woods at 14 this week. Josh Reynolds is sneaky as usual, but this is not the week that I think he has a bigger performance. I think there's still a couple left in him here down the stretch, but I don't think this is the week. So yeah, if I had to pick one absolutely out of that group, it is going to be Brandon Cooks, just because of the higher ceiling.
Now, when you look at the other side of things for the Bears, it would seem like it's a great spot here for Tyree Cohen and Trey Burton, but are you trusting the Bears wide receivers as much in this one with Aqib Talib back there and maybe not doing as much here of late to beyond Allen Robinson?
Yeah, I know some people might be looking at Anthony Miller, and I love me some Anthony Miller in dynasty leagues, but in redraft season long leagues right now, I can't trust him. Allen Robinson is about the only thing you can trust there. I am nervous about Trey Burton because, hey, one target last week, didn't catch it, obviously. Adam Shaheen back in the mix and got the red zone work. I just a few factors there that he's not one of the top six for me. And as I said, it's kind of a toss up. So could he have a big game? Sure. He's shown that he has that capability. Could he put up a goose egg? Yeah, he did it last week. So it's very, very risky there with Trey Burton.
Now, looking at Cohen, I mean, the Rams' big weakness here is definitely with their linebackers and being able to move around and keep up with speedy guys here. Now, do you see Terry Cohen slowly kind of developing into the light version of Alvin Kamara and Christian McCaffrey? Because his usage and production has been pretty outstanding here. This matchup seems to line up with that.
What definitely lines up with that, we've seen multiple times this season where this Rams team has been susceptible to speed. I go back to, week 8, they had a trouble with that Packers team with the explosive ability of Aaron Jones. So Tariq Cohen coming off of a surprising monster week last week definitely is intriguing. Now, the problem with him in non-PPR formats or even half-point PPR is the fact that really that's all he's going to do. They're still going to use Jordan Howard as the primary between the tackles back. So that inevitably invites volatility to the party. So you have to be aware of that if you're using Cohen as an RB2 this week.
Now, last question about this game and for the segment here is Mitchell Trubisky. Are you trusting him in this one? Because there's some people that really like him and really hate him. Where do you kind of stand on this particular week if he's able to play through the shoulder injury?
Well, I hope I'm not on the fence, because really like him to me would be like top 5. Really don't like him would be like outside the top 15. And I have him at 10, so I'm kind of right in the middle there. But the moral of that would be that there are quarterbacks this week who have very tough matchups. You know, I'm not underestimating the Texans for Andrew Luck. I think Russell Wilson, is in a tricky spot. Carson Wentz is in a tricky spot this week. So I would start Trubisky over all of those guys. Now, again, if I had Trubisky or Aaron Rodgers, I'm going to lean Aaron Rodgers, even with everything that's happening in Green Bay. But I think Trubisky is in play as a top 12 option, and that means he's going to be a quarterback one for a lot of teams out there in the fantasy playoffs.
Well, hopefully he works out as a happy medium for those who want him, and hopefully he'll be healthy, because that will also help some of these Bears players produce around him. Jeff, thanks a lot for joining us. Where can we find your work there at Pro Football Focus, and what should everyone be reading on the site?
Sure. Over a column that tries to hit up every single player that's possibly fantasy relevant for the week. Of course, the rankings are over there. And you mentioned the wide receiver cornerback matchup chart that's put together by yours truly. And that, of course, is at profootballfocus.com.
All right. Definitely check that out. Good time to get a subscription there just in time for the holidays. We'll take you through almost all of the regular season and playoffs of fantasy football next year. So check that out for sure. Jeff, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next week. Good luck in your games this week.
Sounds good. You too.
All right.
Thanks again to Jeff. What a great segment there, breaking down those four games for us. And again, he'll be here for the final 3 weeks of the regular season as well. So we're going to go beyond week 16 to get his insight for games, because we know DFS and some leagues are still playing into week number 17. Now, we still have a few more things game-wise to talk about here in week 14, and we have a few 1 o'clock games to get to, one more actually, and then we have a few of the late games as well that we haven't discussed, so we'll get through those here before we get out of here and set you up here on a matchup-focused Wednesday. We have the Panthers and Browns is a game that we're looking at in that early window, 1 p.m. It's a 1.5-point favorite to the Panthers. It's a 47 over under. Now, when you look at the Panthers side of things, I think you look at the shift in this offense. It's been about the fast, quick guys. You're going to see a lot more of DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel playing off what Christian McCaffrey's doing, especially with Devin Funches not looking good. Greg Olsen done here for the season with that foot injury reoccurrence. So I don't think you're going to extend Ian Thomas. I don't think you're suddenly going to get Darius Wright and Torrey Smith involved more. It's going to be a lot of McCaffrey, Moore, and Samuel and what they can do, because they can create nightmares for this Browns defense. They like to be aggressive with Greg Williams. So there are going to be some opportunities where these guys beat the blitz, use on screen, play against the aggressiveness of the Browns. And that kind of neutralizes what Denzel Ward is going to do as kind of a straight-up cover guy. I know it's a tough matchup for Moore if he's lined up straight against the rookie Denzel Ward, fellow rookie, but you can look back to just any Ohio State-Maryland game to see that. But when you look at this situation, I think with the Panthers, they'll move Moore around, move Samuel around away from this. A lot of underneath there for the Panthers is maybe there's a little concern about the right shoulder and the aggravation for Cam Newton last week, maybe not throwing as deep. So they know these guys can make things happen after the catch, all three of them. So that's, I'm saying, Caffrey we know is locked in as a high-end RB1. I think both Samuel and Moore are in play as wide receiver threes this week. Now, anything else? I think you're going to play Cam Newton, of course, because he's every week he still gets done, even with the four interceptions last week. He put up enough numbers with his running and getting the 300 yards passing and multiple TDs where he's still viable. But I'm not too excited where his ceiling is pretty limited this week. So keep that in mind if you're playing him and if you need to go for a player with a slightly higher ceiling this particular week. And Baker Mayfield, I'm not saying he would be a guy that would start, but I think Mayfield has a pretty nice ceiling this week. He still almost threw for 400 yards last week. I know he had the big mess of interceptions, but it could have been easily the other way because he just made some self-inflicted mistakes. The Panthers' defense doesn't offer the same type of resistance here, especially with them on the road and Mayfield in the comfortable environment at home. You look at his primary guys underneath, Jarvis Landry, David Njoku, a pretty good matchup. I think Antonio Callaway, Rashad Higgins can do some things as well. So it doesn't matter. Mayfield doesn't play favorites. He's going to throw it around. He's going to find the right matchup. The Panthers' pass rush hasn't quite been there. Their secondary struggled as well. Their linebackers aren't covering. So if you were afraid of Mayfield, and he kind of actually still was okay, given all things, in some leagues he gave you 15 or 16 points last week, even with a really bad game. So at home, I expect him to play a lot better. The Panthers' defense is not as good. So look at him, Nick Chubb. If you need Landry and Njoku, totally use them. Callaway in a deeper league. I think Higgins is just too hard to trust because he's actually the touchdown-dependent one, where Callaway has made big plays and been a little bit more involved consistently here as their main receiver on the outside for the Browns. And I'm staying away from both defenses because of the two Heisman winner, number one overall picks, Newton versus Mayfield in this pretty good duel overall and one of the more underrated, entertaining games of the week. Now, our next game, as we have to hit the rest of the 4 o'clock window here, the Broncos and 49ers. And with this one, you're looking at a game where a lot of more of Phillip Lindsay, very similar to the matchup last week. I wouldn't necessarily trust Cortland Sutton as much in this one. I feel like it's an Emmanuel Sanders and a tight end game more for the Broncos. Last week wasn't that case. It was more run and take a deep shot to Sutton. You have Richard Sherman on the other side, so again, I think it's going to be a very conservative, safe game plan as the Broncos try to keep winning, stay in the wild card hunt here with Keenum, and they can get away with it because Lindsay can just do whatever he wants in this one, and Sanders is probably going to be open for a lot of chunk games in the middle of the field as well. So I really like the Broncos' main guys against Sutton. I'm not going with this week. You can look at Matt Lacoste maybe for a rebound, but really hard to trust when he put up a zero after the big game the previous week. So let's not get too fancy. I think the Broncos' defense is a solid play as well with Von Miller and company. And Nick Mullins on the other side making a ton of mistakes, even if he's throwing and being relentless. And they could have a decent running game with Jeff Wilson Jr. Speaking of Jeff Wilson Jr., with Matt Breida out with the ankle injury, I'm not feeling him too much here. I think he's definitely viable if you're using Breida and you need some guy with volume. He's definitely a guy you can look into this week. But overall, I would just curb my expectations for what Wilson can do. Dante Pettis, if he starts again here, this Broncos secondary is not very good. They don't have Chris Harris Jr. anymore either. If he's starting again with Marquise Goodwin and Pierre Garçon out, I think he's definitely a viable option for you because he just looks good out there. Some players are just talented, running routes, making big plays, and he just has a natural feel, a very underrated receiver from Washington. Last week was a bit of a homecoming, so that was a little bit of a spark against the Seahawks. But at home, I think
there's really a good connection between him and Mullins here. And Kyle Shanahan, we know they're going to have a competent offense in certain situations. So I expect a lot of George Kittle and a lot of Pettis really helping Mullins here in garbage time in Week 14. The next game we'll look at is the Bengals and Chargers. This is another 4:05 game. And with the Bengals and Chargers, you're looking at a big spread in favor of the Chargers at home. 14 points here. The Bengals don't have AJ Green. They don't have Andy Dalton. So where do they produce here? I think Tyler Boyd is a safe guy. I'm not going to CJ Uzomah the way Derwin James and the Chargers coverage is playing back there against tight end. So not going there. I think Tyler Boyd is pretty much it in the passing game. Of course, Joe Mixon is going to be a big factor as well. That's their only chance really in this game to hang around. Feeding Mixon, the Chargers are kind of depleted against the run because of Corey Legent and Denzel Perriman being out. So I expect a lot of Mixon and safer things to Boyd as well. And really the only two guys there, and the volume and production is going to be in their favor in a game where there's going to be a chance for some garbage scoring for the Bengals. Now, on the Chargers side of things, where do you go? I'm not really trusting anything too much deep here. I think it's the principles. Again, Phillip Rivers, Keenan Allen, I think if we're going to extend a receiver, you could see a bit of Antonio Gates. The principles now include, to me, with Melvin Gordon down, Austin Ekeler and Justin Jackson. There's no resistance from the Bengals, really, against running backs, whether it's on the ground or through the air. It doesn't matter. So I think you're going to see a lot of those guys splitting the work here, a lot of Ekeler early to maybe help them get a lead, and then a lot of Jackson going downhill in the second half with the lead. So I think there's room for both backs to produce, and that means necessarily not going to have to force the deep shots, Tyrell Williams or Mike Williams. See, just a very safe, conservative approach for the Chargers. They got the Chiefs game next week. They want to win this game and get out of there. And I think that's going to be Phillip Rivers' conservative passing. Still productive. I see the 250-2 here with Gates and Allen helping him get there, and Ekeler as well. But I think the running game is going to take over for the Chargers in the second half. So good spot for everything Chargers, including their defense at home against Jeff Driscoll. Our next game in the 4:25 window, we have three games left here, two 4:25 games, and of course, Monday Night Football that we have to talk about. It's the Eagles and Cowboys, and this is a 43 over-under, so not too many points here. It's 3.5 favorite line for the Cowboys. And the Cowboys defense, the Eagles, I'm kind of fading much of the Eagles here. I don't love Carson Wentz in this one after what the Cowboys did to Drew Brees. Alshon Jeffrey has just been doing nothing of late. Nelson Aguilar, he's pretty much done here. So it's pretty much Zach Ertz and Golden Tate are the two guys, the guys who produced against the Redskins last week. And with this backfield now being a total split between Josh Adams, I know he's still got over 20 carries, but Corey Clement and Darren Sproles were seeing key touches in terms of the passing game and some change of pace rushing and the red zone as well with Sproles scoring. So extremely hard to trust a three-headed monster, especially in a tough matchup with Leighton Vander Esch and this very tough Cowboys front seven. So I'm fading everything. Again, Tate, if you look back, he did have a 2-touchdown explosive game against the Cowboys as a Lion. So that makes you feel good about Golden Tate this week. Over Jeffrey, he just looked better of late all of a sudden. So Tate and Ertz are where I'm going with the Eagles, and that's about it. On the Cowboys side of things, Dak Prescott at home has played pretty well. I know the Saints game didn't have a lot of production, but they were in control of that defensively. I still think he can work his way to 2 TDs, maybe one on the ground, playing off Ezekiel Elliott, who I love in this game as well, to have a big, big game at home against Philadelphia. So I think you look at Prescott, Amari Cooper, and Elliott. I'm not going to extend to Michael Gallup. Cole Beasley's hurt, so I think you might see a little bit more of Allen Hurns working in the slot this particular week. But the Cowboys defense, Elliott, yet another one of those running back defense stacks that you can look at. Prescott can play off that with Cooper against this banged-up Eagles secondary to have a decent game this week enough. In that 252 range, I don't expect it to be really high-end, but playing off Elliott, he should get his opportunities to get scores there with Elliott getting them in the red zone. The
Next game we look at in this 425 is the Lions and Cardinals. And this one is a tough one to project because it's two bad teams. It's a 40.5 over-under, so pretty low. Three-point favorites, the Lions, are coming in. I do like the Lions in this game, but how are they going to get there? I think it's going to be a lot of LeGarrette Blount and Theo Riddick. That's how you attack the Cardinals with your running backs, either power running or using them in the passing game. So I like both of those guys if you need them. I don't love Kenny Golladay because he's going to get a lot of Patrick Peterson in this one, and he's going to be the focal point easily with no Marvin Jones or Golden Tate or anyone else to draw attention there. So you're going to see a lot of underneath passing to Riddick and a lot of running from Blount as the Lions try to win this one. One thing about the Lions, they're going to go after things that are the weak on the other team with Matt Patricia, and it's clear the Cardinals are not good against the run. We'll see about Kerryon Johnson. Of course, if he plays, it's going to be great, great things for the Lions because one guy who can do it all against this Cardinals team and definitely in a smash spot here. But Blount and Riddick can offer now extended value if dispersed in that backfield there in this game and go from there. So there's not much else to see or say about the Lions. I'm not going to trust their defense on the road at all. I know the matchup says you could think about it, but I'm not going there this week because the Cardinals can move the ball here with David Johnson, with Larry Fitzgerald. There's no more Christian Kirk. He's down on IR with a foot injury. So you're going to see a lot of Fitzgerald and Johnson in the passing game. Of course, Johnson in the running game with more of Chase Edmonds, but hopefully less of Chase Edmonds if you own Johnson this week. And the Cardinals' defense is a little bit more intriguing because they're the one at home. The Lions are making a lot of mistakes, especially in the passing game. So I expect this to be rather tight, so that's going to help Johnson and Fitzgerald produce in this game. But you're not looking any more than that when you're talking about the Arizona Cardinals. Now, our final game here is the Monday night game, is the Vikings-Seahawks. It's a 3.5 spread in favor of the Seahawks. 45.5 is the point total. Now, when you look at this, it might look on paper like a tough matchup for the Seahawks passing game, but I really like Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett, Doug Baldwin, the main guys there. It's hard to extend because Jerron Brown or David Moore could be the third guy gets involved, but definitely looking good for Baldwin and Lockett to keep producing. Russell Wilson is playing out of his mind. It doesn't matter that he's facing the Vikings. We know Tom Brady came through against his Vikings defense at home in prime time, or in a prime spot last week. So when you look at it, Wilson, he's too hot to even consider benching at this point. And you just have a lot of good value overall in these receivers, even with low volume, because of Wilson getting the ball in the end zone to these guys, especially Lockett and Baldwin consistently. You know, Chris Carson, you're going to play him because of the volume. I know it's not the easiest matchup, but the Patriots were able to have some success here against the Vikings on the ground. And Carson is the man here. He should play through that finger injury and be fine. So just by getting the 20 to 25 touches alone, you're going in that direction this week. Now, the Vikings side of things, I really like Dalvin Cook. Really like all the skill players here. I think if anyone has a tougher matchup, it's Adam Thielen, but because Justin Coleman can match him size for size in the slot. And Stephon Diggs just has such a good matchup with either corner there, whether it's Trey Flowers or Shaquille Griffin. So I think Diggs, it's more of a Diggs game than a Thielen game this week. And it's going to be a nice Dalvin Cook game because we saw the Seahawks give up a lot of receptions to our running backs and the production there, as well as can be a little bit vulnerable against the run in certain stretches. So Dalvin Cook and Diggs, I think that's where the value is going to be. Thielen's still going to be solid. You're going to play him every week. We know that. But it's been quiet of him for him of late. It's not the easy 100. People have realized to focus on him a little bit more. He still can bail you out with a touchdown there. So he's still in your lineup. I just wouldn't extend to Kyle Rudolph either just because we thought he could do something last week and didn't really happen, and after a good game the previous week. So not feeling him with Bradley McDougald on the other side there. Definitely not going to play the Vikings defense, but you can definitely look at the Seahawks defense at home in primetime this week against Vikings team that we know makes a lot of mistakes with Kirk Cousins in big game situations. So there you have it. There's a look at all 16 games on the Week 14 NFL schedule, fantasy football-wise, bring him down, every aspect, both sides, giving you a lot to think about here, but you got to think about everything in the most critical week for fantasy football. Thanks again to Jeff Ratcliffe for joining me. Tomorrow will be Tyler Lochner of Pro Football Focus to wrap up the week. For Locked On Fantasy Football, for Matchup Focused here on Wednesday, this has been Vinny Iyer. We'll talk to you next time.